Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a great guest. His name is Kevin Blackwell, and he's actually from my same neighborhood here in New Mexico, which is kind of rare, but that's a great thing. So, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Nancy.
Now, Kevin, I'd like you to probably tell our listeners a little bit about who Kevin is and what started you on your journey. And then after that, I have a bunch of questions to ask you, okay?
Okay, that sounds good. I'm actually relatively new to Santa Fe. I arrived in September of this year, so I've only been here for a couple of months.
Yeah,
so I guess my journey starts way back in 1979. I was a 16-year-old freshman. I got admitted to Columbia University School of Engineering when I was 15 years old. And I was a really nerdy math and science type person that didn't pay much attention at all to metaphysical things. But in the spring semester of my freshman year, overnight I started hearing voices, seeing colors, feeling energy in my hands, having premonitions. And so I had a powerful psychic awakening back in 1979. One of the dominant features of what happened back then is that a circle of light appeared in the corner of my room while I was getting ready to go to sleep. And it was purple, and it started to move toward me, and I screamed because I didn't know what it was and what was happening. And so the next night at around the same time, a blue light appeared in the corner of the room. And I was terrified because I was afraid that it was going to charge me as well. But instead of coming closer to me, it spoke to me and introduced itself as Mary and told me that it was great to see me again and that she loved me. And that really changed my life forever. As soon as that happened, the purple light returned and introduced itself as Jesus. And over the next few months, I had about every spiritual master that you could think of come and introduce themselves to me in my dormitory room. Buddha, Krishna. I had grown up as a Baptist and wasn't familiar with Catholic saints, but Saint Francis and Saint Anthony and other saints came and introduced themselves to me. I had very little exposure to any religion outside of Christianity, but, you know, Muhammad and Buddha and Krishna and Rama and all these beings just came into my room and started introducing themselves to me. And so it was a really exhilarating period of time, but also very scary and very weird. I mean, you know, usually when you think of being in the presence of divinity, you think of yourself as being, you know, overwhelmed and in awe. But it really was almost the other way around. All of these beings seemed to be really giddy that I could hear them, and they all said how happy they were that I could see them again and how great it was to connect with me. And they also said things like they were happy and excited about what I was here to do and what my mission was. And I had grown up in a pretty dysfunctional family like many of us had. And so it was really kind of mind-blowing that all these beings were talking to me with this type of tone. And so one of the first questions that came to my mind was, you know, they probably have the wrong guy, right? And then the other thing that came to my mind, and I don't know where it came from because I really wasn't well-versed in spirituality at all, but it just hit me that most of these beings that were introducing themselves to me had gone through a period in their lives on Earth in which they were absolutely all alone or in despair or thought they were crazy. They had all gone through some horrible dark night of the soul. And it occurred to me that if they were talking to me about some type of mission, then maybe they were asking me to go through that same type of experience. And that really terrified me. And so based on that terror and that fear, I kind of went on a 28-year journey of running away from what they were inviting me to do. I withdrew from Columbia shortly after all this stuff started happening to me so that I could figure it out and understand it. And as a result, you know, my family kind of renounced me and rejected me because they didn't understand what it was that I was doing. So for the next 28 years, my life was kind of pretty ineffectual and split, because I would spend half of my time trying to do all the right worldly things that you're supposed to do to try to prove to my family that I hadn't lost my mind. So I went to great schools. I had my MBA from Duke. I went to graduate film school at Columbia, and I worked in great organizations. But then the other half of the time, I would try to somehow devote myself to the charge that was given to me by all these spiritual masters when I was 16. And so I would quit these jobs, I would quit these educational programs, and try to do something more overtly spiritual. And so as a result of going back and forth between these two sides of myself, I kind of didn't do anything well for that 28-year period, because what I was really doing was avoiding the process of becoming that these entities had invited me to go through when I was 16. But finally, back in 2006, I decided that I at least need to try to live a more spiritual life. So I left my job in the corporate world and began to work on a book that was really received well by publishers that looked at it at the time. And I wanted to do more counseling work and start giving lectures and workshops. And so for the first year, everything started to go really, really well. And things were just progressing fine. But then all of a sudden in 2007, things started to go wrong. And I could go into detail about the series of things that went wrong, but after a few months, it just became really, really, really clear that I was at this point that I had been avoiding for 28 years. And I had no choice but to move forward and jump into what I like to call the abyss and go through this dark night of the soul and go through this process of becoming. And I'm sure you might have some questions about that as that goes on, but to tell it in a short and quick way, after I jumped into the abyss, within a period of about a month, I had a profound awakening experience, very similar to the one that Eckhart Tolle talks about in his books. And since then, I've been going through the process of trying to get used to this new state of awareness and figure out what I wanted to do, you know, going forward after attaining this state. And so I'm close to having a book published, and I'm starting to give talks around in town. I've had a short documentary film made about the journey to awakening, and I'm getting ready to start teaching all the amazing things that I've learned for the past 30 years.
That's quite a history.
Yeah,
which is cool. It's a very cool history, you know, because, Kevin, a lot of times there are many people who get to go through what you have gone through, and a lot of them do not handle it well. They run like you said that you did, you know, and it doesn't matter how long it takes you, it always catches up with you down the road. So most people don't realize if they would just give in to that and allow it and relax, they could be so much ahead of the game. But our normal fears is to think that you're crazy or you're nuts or something's going on, or, you know, you have to have something wrong with you. I mean, I could hear all the stories about how people thought that they were just weird, you know. And so it's very natural. You know, it's very natural for people to feel like that. I was a little different. You know, I got protected from the time I was 6 years old all the way through to now. So mine was a little different, a lot easier than most people's are, at least that I've been talking to. But yours is very, very neat experience, because I don't think a lot of people get the pleasure of meeting everybody as you got to meet, even at age 16. But see, you're way ahead of the game, because you wouldn't have been in college at age 16 to begin with. So,
true.
My thought is that probably way back in your early childhood, whether you remember it or not, you were first actually introduced to them. And then they were happy that you came back again. And then they were really happy that you came back this last time. But nevertheless, it's quite
That's
a journey.
True.
Now, the book that you're going to have released soon, what's the name of it?
The book is tentatively titled Waking Up.
Okay. And it's about your experiences?
Yes, it's about that 28 year journey, starting off where I was at Columbia and bringing it up through the awakening experience in New York in 2007.
Now, when you talk with people, do they ask you how you felt about it, or were you afraid? I mean, you already explained it to us, but when you're out doing lectures and people try to relate some of their experiences, because a lot of us have them, do they kind of tell you how afraid they were, just like you kept saying you wanted to run from it? Do they tell you that it scared them?
Yeah, a lot of people talk about fear. A lot of people talk about feeling strange and feeling out of place. A lot of people talk about not being prepared for it psychologically because it just seems overwhelming and really hard to process. And so I think that that's one of the reasons why telling these stories is so important, because it makes it commonplace and people start to see the commonalities between these different types of stories and understand, you know, that the process isn't all that strange and weird. And especially during this particular transition we're going through, I think lots and lots of people are going to be waking up. And so it's really important that we tell our stories to make these future awakened souls feel more comfortable while they're going through their process.
Yeah, I've been doing my counseling for 35 years. So I've been doing it for a long time. And a lot of people have the same story, Kevin, you know, about some of the things that's happened to them and how afraid they were and how they didn't know what to do. And, you know, finally it's like they sat down in the chair long enough to relax so that they could come in and explain things a little bit better to them. So I'm thinking that you probably got it explained to you, otherwise you may still be running. Is that not true?
Well, no, I didn't have a lot of outside sources come to my rescue. But in a weird type of way, the way it worked for me was once these entities started speaking to me, I guess because I was a nerdy engineering student, I realized that if they could come and talk to me, I could probably come and talk to them. And since it was all about energy, I quickly realized that there was no one in the universe or no situation or event that I couldn't tune into and communicate with. So I think what's kind of unique about my story is that I learned a lot from talking to each of these different masters. So I had the opportunity of like going to Jesus and talking to him about his fears and his insecurities and what it was like for him as he came into the awareness that he was the Messiah, or talking to Moses about his journey throughout the wilderness before coming to grips with his experience. And so a lot of my teachers have been these very masters that came to talk to me. They're the ones that helped me get comfortable with what I was going through and experiencing, because they could talk, you know, very vividly about how they dealt with it during their time on Earth.
Right, and they are by far the best teachers ever anyway.
True. So I think one of the things I want to do going forward is really demystify, you know, the lives of some of these masters, because, you know, most of us have them way up on a pedestal, and I think it's really important to understand that they're human just like us, and we're human just like them, and are thus capable of attaining their same degree of realization.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, take a look around at the way our society does things. They put many things up on pedestals only to have them fall.
Tear them down. Look at Tiger Woods.
Yeah, there's no place else to go. You know, when you're on a pedestal, there's no place else to go but down. You know, and it's very hard to stay on that pedestal. And I agree with you. I think people have to understand that a lot of their teachings come from what their experiences have been, you know, in whatever time frame that they have been here. And I think most people need to understand that it's not really different, that we all are very exquisite human beings, and we all have the same ability, but it is allowing it and agreeing to let our conscious mind, which is our fear-based mind, understand that it is okay to have it and to actually be excited about it, because it does work and it is wonderful. So I think that's important for people to understand. Now, you did more studying, though, with other people, too, because you went into past life regression and you studied astrology and tarot. Out of all the studies that you have done, which one do you like the best?
Oh, that's a good question. In terms of learning about myself and understanding my mission and what was going on inside of me, I think the things that helped me the most were astrology, past life regression therapy, taking a look at my past lives, and as I've already said, these ongoing conversations with the masters. Those are the things that that helped me along my path the most. When it comes to working with others, I probably have focused most on astrology and intuitive counseling. Really, I try to devote myself to helping others understand their mission and calling and the things that they need to focus on and stuff like that. But it's all fun. I mean, I think that human beings, we are amazing. And because I was so afraid of going through this process of becoming, you know, I decided to try to compensate for that fear by learning as much as I could about this area. And so I became a great astrologer. I became a good counselor. I learned how to read auras and do all of these different types of things because I figured, hey, I know that I'm not really going through this process of becoming, but at least I can talk knowledgeably about this realm of experience. And so I've exposed myself to lots of different modalities and ways of helping people.
During your time of awakening, did you go to different religions to find out if they had an answer for you?
I did study different religions. I ended up leaving engineering school, and when I returned to college, I did focus on comparative religions for my undergraduate degree. So I certainly did study different religions to try to find answers and to try to understand more about life and things like that. But even though it was fascinating and interesting, I believe that that I focused more on communication with the masters related to these different religions or that spawned these different religions than learning the tenets of the religion itself.
Why do you think they chose you?
I guess there are different ways of answering that question. I mean, perhaps because of my past life lineage and the types of things that I've done in past lives. In a certain sense, you can say that this is just a continuation. It seems like in many past lives, I've been either in positions of political or spiritual leadership. And so it's kind of like continuing the thread. I believe that that on a deeper level, I chose to play a certain type of role in this incarnation. And so on schedule, this type of thing started to happen to me. And then also I just believe that we're living in a special time in which many people, if they allow themselves to be open to it, will be urged on in the direction of spiritual growth and spiritual teaching.
Kevin, in some of your past lives, and I'm sure you've had many, do you remember anyone that stands out more than another?
Any particular past life that stands out more than another? There have been some impactful past lives. It was really interesting because, you know, I believe we remember past lives that relate most to what we're going through in the current lifetime. And so it's been interesting to see how the types of past lives that I remember have changed throughout the years. For a while, all of the past lives that I remembered had to do with people struggling to be heard, struggling to share their message. I remember the first past life I remembered, I went into the trance-like state to connect with the past life, and when I opened my eyes, I was on the top of a really high mountain, sitting down and looking down on another high mountain that had all these structures kind of built into its side. And I remember asking the young warrior that I was, where I was, what time this was. And the only answer that I could really discern was that it was an Incan lifetime. And it was really funny when I came to out of that memory. I had skipped a lot of grades, so I had missed a bunch of history courses, so I had nothing, no idea, no clue on what the Incan civilization was all about. So I raced to the library and decided to look it up. And the first book I picked up had a picture of Machu Picchu from above, and that was precisely the view that I had when I entered that past life. And when I talked to that warrior about what was going on and tuned into his life, he was a young man that had a strong premonition that something horrible was about to happen to his culture. And he had tried to communicate it and was unable to get anyone to hear him. And it was within his lifetime that the Spaniards came and changed the direction of the Incan civilization. And so that was a powerful lifetime that I remembered, but it also related very profoundly to where I was at the time that I remembered it, because here I was learning all this amazing stuff, but I still was, a person that was working in a normal job and living a very ordinary life, and I had no clue about how I would ever be able to share this information with the world at large. And so that's an example of a lifetime, and it is always very interesting to see how it relates to what you're going through now.
Yeah, they always have some kind of connection there, even though people don't want to agree with it or understand it, there's always a connection there.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think about all of the predictions that people are giving out for 2012?
I think that the doom and gloom predictions, for example, the movie that just came out in which the entire world is almost destroyed, I think that the predictions have been a little bit misunderstood. I tend to focus on the positive end of the spectrum and believe that we truly are at the end of one age and at the beginning of another age, which can be a great leap forward for humanity. So I think that we are in the midst of a dramatic shift in which human beings will just raise and elevate the level of their consciousness and start to tap into more of the glorious things that they truly are. And so I think that that we're in the midst of a dramatic shift. In order to shift from one reality to a new reality, there is a certain amount of chaos and a certain amount of destruction as the old structures and ways of getting things done start to be destroyed. But I think in the long run that it's a move toward a positive, more better earth and a more better world, especially if we do the work that needs to get done.
I agree, except my angels have always told me it's really starting during 2010.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's starting now. I agree totally we're already in the midst of it. And if we're expecting something to start in 2012, we will have missed most of the action.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening now for sure.
What do you think about all these children that are here today who have all of this great knowledge, and yet our society is deeming them as ADD, ADHD, and drugging them like it's candy?
I think that it is absolutely, absolutely horrible. I think that a lot of very special and amazing children are being born that are really tuned into the higher angels of our being, and they have this profound knowledge. But as a result of having this profound knowledge, They just simply do and process things in a different way than most adults. And of course, when people see something different from themselves, their tendency is to label it as being weird or bad and to try to fix it. And so that's what's happening to all these children that are being called autistic and are being thought of in some ways as being deficient. But I think that we should it's really interesting that many of them, if you sit with them and really analyze them and go deeper into their being, it's really, you discover that they have amazing gifts, amazing ways of knowing, amazing ways of getting things done. And instead of devaluing this, we should value it and try to learn from it and support them in their differences. I think that, of this new age is about creating a new society, but it's also about ultimately giving birth to a new type of human being. And I think that in these children that are being born, we start to glimpse some of the qualities of what this new human being will be like.
And I agree wholeheartedly. In fact, that is why I came to New Mexico. I came to New Mexico because I have a 501c3 called the Child's Miracle Mind, Inc., and our project is the School of Now, which is the school
wow.
that will never be outdated. And it's to help all of these children that are being misunderstood, misinterpreted, whether they fit the bell curve, whether they don't, but mostly the ones that have been labeled with ADD, ADHD, to help them not have to be on those drugs and to help them to see who they are, why they're here, and what they are supposed to be doing.
That's fantastic, and it's such an important thing to do. So I commend you on that, very highly. That's great. These children need to be paid attention to. They need to be nurtured. They need to be given the space to be and explore who they are. And if that happens, they'll teach us amazing lessons and help us, help lead us into this new age.
Yeah, I think they have a great many things to help us with, but adults tend to have their ego get in the way and go, well, it's just a kid. That kid can't know. That kid doesn't understand. And then I can use the perfect example, Kevin. At age 16, you were already in college.
Sure, that's very true.
I'm sure you had a very hard time with that. Like you said, you missed out on a lot of the normal grade school things. But so you know this, in reality, they did you a favor. Because a lot of the grade school teachings that they are getting are based upon a lot of fallacies and untruths. And so they did you a favor.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
And I think it's really important that we let these children be who they are. And, your parents were upset because you quit. If they really knew the reasons for everything that you did, they probably would look at themselves and go, well, we didn't know that. Which is what a lot of parents do today. It's much easier to give your child a drug, a pill or something to settle them down rather than say, what's really going on within your system or what's happening.
Right.
They don't take the time, and it's time that they take time because these children, a lot like yourself, Kevin, have got a great deal of knowledge, and yet they don't know what to do with it because nobody's helping them with it. Like you said, you didn't get to talk to anybody because you didn't really know who to go to. Well, what's going to be going on during 2010 is a lot of places, like what I'm trying to do, is going to be opening so these children do have some place to go so that they can be understood. Like the difference between most of them and mine is that mine is a live-in and a day school both. So,
Okay,
that
great.
When the kids come and live in, they don't have to go back and go through the traumatic experiences of somebody saying, why are you doing that? You can't do that. You're supposed to do this. You have to do that. Blah, 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 blah. So,
right.
Which is what you went through. So I'm sure you can relate really well with that.
Yeah, I can. And, I'm still going through it.
Stop.
Yeah, I still have family members that have no idea what I'm doing and why I do some of the things that I do. So it's great. I mean, that's one of my dreams as I go forward to create a space for people to feel comfortable with their process,
mm-hmm.
to not feel marginalized and left out or or weird or anything like that.
See, one of the coolest things about the school, when I want to do the school now, you're going to love this one, is every month for 1 week a special instructor will come in, and that special instructor will teach what they know. Like for yourself, example, they teach what you know, what you have been through to the entire school. And then after you leave, or the special instructor leaves, the school will continue to practice that for the whole month until the next special instructor comes in. And that's going to go on all year round.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's a very good idea.
They can resonate with whatever it is they need to resonate with to help them, and it's very, very important. Now, you talk about astrology.
Okay.
Why does astrology stand out the most for you? What is it that you like so much about astrology versus any of the other, you know, things that you've done?
I think I like astrology because it appeals so much to my left brain. It appeals as much to my left brain as my right brain. I mean, it has a very rich history. There are lots of different rules and details of interpretation and stuff like that. And so it's a long, rich history of interpretation that's continually evolving. You know, I could study astrology for the rest of my life and never understand or know everything there is to know about it. It's that rich, it's that complex. There's Western astrology, Eastern astrology, Chinese astrology, Tibetan astrology. It just goes on and on and on. And so it's a very rich and diverse subject. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I like it so much.
Is there any particular kind of astrology that you like better than the other?
I think I'm most familiar with Western astrology, and there's a particular pretty small niche in Western astrology called evolutionary astrology. And the focus of evolutionary astrology is to discover the soul's intention in the current lifetime. And it primarily focuses on the position of the planet Pluto and also the North Node, South Node axis as a way of determining your soul's intention in terms of the way it wants to grow and the things it wants to accomplish in this lifetime. And so I think that's my favorite branch of astrology is evolutionary astrology, because it gets right to, you know, the key basic question, where am I heading, where does my soul want to head, and what lessons are on the table for me to really learn and master in this lifetime.
So if I give you my granddaughter's birthday, can you tell me something about her?
I'm not in front of a computer right now, but I can tell you very, very basic elementary stuff about her. If you know more details about her chart, I could use those to give it. But, yeah, we can give that a shot.
Well, this is going to just slay you. She was born February 2nd, 2000. She is a 222 baby.
February 2nd, 2000. Wow. That's also the day, I don't know if you knew this, that's the day that Oxygen TV launched their network. I was at that opening party, and they made a big deal of it being 2000. And so she is an Aquarian, huh? An Aquarian child. And so she's a combination of being friendly and caring about the people around her. And because Aquarians usually have a strong humanitarian vibe and they're into brotherhood and sisterhood, but on the same token, Aquarians, generally speaking, need their space, need their freedom, and need their independence. Aquarians usually are very original and kind of march to the beat of their own drum, and don't like to be told what to do or forced into a certain type of behavior. Being original, being independent, and being free, you know, are very core values for Aquarius. And they can be, you know, different, you know, unique, or depending which how you feel about it, Aquarians can often be called unique or weird, depending on your perspective. But usually it's all about doing things in their own way, having a thinking about things and seeing things, you know, from a different point of view than those that are around them. And needing their space and freedom, but at the same time caring about their society and their community.
Yeah, she's 9 going on 30. So, although it was very true, everything you said about her, she is very independent. She can be stubborn. She has her own drum that she beats to, and she doesn't want to have people tell her what to do because she's already kind of got it figured out in her own little head. And it's kind of interesting watching her. That's why I put my entire school and my 501c3 together, is because of my granddaughter. Because I knew if she was having such a hard time with life in general, there are many other kids having the same hard time. So she's the basis for putting it all together. And,
that's fantastic.
You know, hopefully it will all get done here. I'm trying to get it done during 2010. So I'm hoping.
It's a good time, perfect timing for it.
All right, I'm back, Kevin. They told me I have to talk up a little louder, so can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay.
I can hear you fine.
Good. Now, you also do tarot card readings.
Yes,
so when you're working with people, do you combine the astrology and tarot together, or do you just do strictly tarot or astrology?
I often do them together. Usually when I give an astrology reading, I start it off by laying down tarot cards. Tarot cards, I think, are very great at giving you a snapshot of the moment, of the current consciousness, and the different energies that are flowing through the person's system on that day. And so it's fun to lay them down first, just to have them kind of sit there, and then go into the astrology reading and do the interpretation. And then at the very end, I interpret the tarot cards in light of the deep insight about personality and character we received during the astrology portion. So I tend to integrate them together.
That's kind of cool. What deck do you use?
I use the Rider Waite deck. And also the Crowley deck. But mostly the traditional Rider-Waite deck.
Yeah, I use the Crowley Thoth deck. And,
okay.
You know, and it has, well, my cards, it's my second deck in 35 years. I used my first original deck for 25 years, and they have no pictures on them whatsoever at this point. Just a little bit of color. My second deck is starting to lose the color, but on the Thoth deck, they have lots of stuff on there. They have the astrology on there. They have the numerology on there. They have all kinds of stuff. But I just, you know, interpret it according to how it's being told to me, how it comes through to me. So it's kind of different. And I know everybody does do things differently. I tried using the Rider-Waite deck, but there wasn't enough energy in the deck. So, I mean, I can read any deck, but there's certain decks that have a lot more energy in it for me. And so the Rider-Waite deck would probably be my least amount of ones that I would probably work with. Now, Kevin, I know you don't have a website yet, but if people would like to get a hold of you, can you give them the information where they can get a hold of you?
Sure. There are two ways. You can get a hold of me via email or direct to my phone. My email address is kgblackwell@gmail.com. And if you email me, I can give you information about the different types of things that I do and send you my menu of services and stuff like that. And also my telephone number is 512-461-0465. If you search for me on YouTube, Kevin G. Blackwell on YouTube, you'll see different clips. Some are from a film that has been made about my journey, and other clips come from a lecture that I gave in Austin, Texas, not too long ago. And so you can find out more about my work on YouTube if you just enter Kevin G. Blackwell. And then last but not least, I have a blog that I haven't written in all that much lately, but the blog is the Media Messiah at blogspot.com.
Okay, now I'm going to have you repeat all of those.
Just so
we'll get them.
Okay, Gmail address is kgblackwell, kgblackwell, at gmail.com. Telephone 512-461-0465. You can go to YouTube and search for Kevin G. Blackwell, and you'll find six clips on YouTube. And then last and probably least, since I haven't written in it lately, is the blog, the Media Messiah blogspot.com.
Kevin, are you scheduled to go out and do any lectures in the very near future?
I have just planned and will start to promote a lecture here in Santa Fe. It's going to be held on January 16th in the Sunroom at Santa Fe Soul. I haven't titled the lecture yet, but it's going to be about the coming age and the reemergence of the sacred feminine, and exactly what that means. And I believe that as part of the presentation, I will spend some time channeling Mary Magdalene so that she can give her perspective on the sacred feminine and what that means.
That's pretty important, the sacred feminine, because it's coming back in, and a lot of the masculine energy is this hard energy that creates a lot of hardness, and the female energy needs to come back in so we can balance it out. Don't you think that might be true?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that the coming age is all about balancing the sacred feminine with the sacred masculine. And so since we really have no idea what the sacred feminine really means, I think that people talking about and trying to get in touch with this and explaining the perspective is really, really helpful, because I think that that's what this transition is all about. Understanding that left brain ways don't work. They don't work. We're not going to fix the government. We're not going to fix the environment. We're not going to fix the economy using simply reason, logic, and willpower. We have to let go, kind of, and allow things to evolve naturally and organically into being. And that is kind of what the sacred feminine is all about.
And again, it's very, very important that people understand that. I'm going to ask you a question that's going to come out of left field. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to, or if you can't, that's okay too. But a lot of people are talking about the UFOs that are supposed to be coming into view more and more. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. I mean, one of the features of my journey has been communication with spiritual beings. And so since, between the age of 16 and 25, I probably talked to every single historical figure that anyone would ever want to talk to. You know, from masters like Jesus and Buddha to curiosities, like Hitler and other people like that. And so finally, around the age of 25, I had thoroughly exhausted every human being that I could think of. And so I really decided to long for the perspective of beings that were outside of our space-time continuum. So I've had a lot of communication with beings from different systems, from the Sirius system, from the Pleiades, Arcturus and Antares, and some others. And so, I'm very aware of extraterrestrials and UFOs and their thoughts and their input on humanity's current situation. So I think that a lot of these beings are very interested in what's going on with humanity now. I think that that if we succeed in making this leap forward in consciousness, that it affects other cultures and other civilizations and other worlds. And so there's a strong interest in observing what's going on Earth, you know, the strong extraterrestrial interest. And then there's a strong contingent of extraterrestrials that very much want to help us make this transition. There has been a lot of talk in the ethers lately about there being some type of clear acknowledgement of the existence of extraterrestrials. There's been a lot of talk about the Obama administration admitting to government cover-up of contact with extraterrestrials. And there's been a lot of talk about extraterrestrials themselves staging a profound demonstration that would make it impossible for anyone to continue to deny their existence. A lot of people are expecting this type of event to happen soon. There are some people that are saying, you know, that we're expecting it to happen by the end of 2009. I do think that this is coming. I tend to think two things. I tend to think that it's going to happen not as soon as we think, but more importantly than that, I think that it will be entirely unpredictable. And so when you read something or hear some channeled information that gives a date, I would be inclined to ignore it. Because when they come, they will be here before anyone knows it.
Yeah, I think they're already here, so that makes a big difference.
Right. True.
See, because
true, but in,
go ahead.
In terms of them, you know, announcing their presence in a more dramatic way, I think that that when it happens, it will be a surprise to all, kind of.
I think it's about time.
You think that it's time?
No, I think that it's time that it happened.
Yeah,
okay.
I look forward to it. I think.
Me too.
I keep
going. Just bring them on. Come on, we're all.
Yeah,
Why do you think our government has covered it up so much?
Control issues. There's many different layers of reasons. One is to control. One is to avoid a mass panic. Or you can argue it's the other way around, that there's a desire to instill fear. I mean, my encounters and understandings of extraterrestrials, for the most part, the ones that I've dealt with have been very wise and very benign and very helpful. But that certainly seems to be different from the publicity and news reports of extraterrestrials. There's a lot of fear and danger and terror associated with ETs. And so I don't know. I think it's an agenda of power, an agenda of keeping the public in the dark, an agenda of separatism, so that one government's encounters with ETs might give them an advantage over another government. And so we don't want to share this information because we kind of want to keep it to ourselves and use it to our advantage. And so there's been many different types of reasons for the cover up.
I think so too. You know, and it's like I get really tired of listening to some of the things I've heard as far as the cover up goes. And then I get to hear the other side of people go, "You've got to be kidding me. How could you not believe this?" I get to hear all of it, which is kind of cool. I really enjoy it. One more time, Kevin, because we're almost out of time, give out all the information that you can where people can get a hold of you.
Sure. My email address is kgblackwell@gmail.com. You email me there, and I'll send you a whole bunch of different type of information about myself. You can call me directly at 512-461-0465 to ask for questions about the different services I offer. You can hear me speak and see me speak on YouTube by searching for Kevin G. Blackwell, and I have 6 YouTube clips online that you could listen to. They're all about 3 to 5 minutes long, so you can get through them pretty quickly. And then last is a blog called the Media Messiah blog.blogspot.com. And those are the best ways to reach me right now. And, or you can come to Santa Fe Soul on January 16th in Santa Fe at 7 o'clock and hear me talk about the Sacred Feminine and channel Mary Magdalene.
That sounds real interesting. You're going to have to send me an email, Kevin. Let me know those dates again, okay?
Yeah.
I'd like to come. You're not that far away from me. Besides, it would be great to meet you in person.
Yeah, it would be. It would be.
So we're going to have to do that. And I'd like to thank you for being on the show, Kevin, because it was very interesting. I'm, you know, very glad that you're here in Santa Fe. You're not that far away so that we can get together and learn a few more things, whether it's about each other or about what's going to be going on, which I look forward to. And so,
yeah, that's great.
That would be really great. And I'd like to make an announcement to all the listeners. On the website, if you go there and look at it from BBS Radio, you will see that I am raffling off a Harley-Davidson motorcycle to help raise money for the Child's Miracle Mind, Inc., to help with the project of building the school. The tickets are only $25. You know a lot of people listen to the show. You could really help us out a little bit just by doing your $25 donation. It's all tax deductible. And who knows, you may get to end up winning a Harley that's valued over $16,000 for a mere $25 or even a Harley leather jacket. So please, folks, go to www.childsmiraclemind.org and get your tickets while they still last. And Kevin, it's great having you on the show. We'll have to have you come back again, and we'll go into more detail about what you're up to, what you're doing, especially after your book gets out. How's that?
Great. That sounds fantastic, Nancy. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, Kevin. You're a very interesting man. I look forward to meeting you in person.
Likewise.
Good. I'd like to thank you all, listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk next week. Take care. Bye now.